All right. Good morning, everybody. My name is Phil Albrechts. I'm the hearing examiner for Kitsap County. And for the record and transcripts, it's August 7th, 2025, 9 o'clock a.m. We're all here this morning on the Clemenson Site Development Activity Permit Appeal and Associated SEPA Appeal, file numbers 24-04572 and 24-01649. Looks like we have all the necessary parties today. Ms. Soto representing the county, Mr. Durland, the applicant, Mr. Clemenson representing the appellant himself. The hearing format is going to be as dictated in the hearing examiner rules of procedure. Pull that up here. That's rule 2.11.2, where we start off with my comments, then county staff does their presentation, then appellant Mr. Clemenson makes his argument. County staff provides their argument, applicant then does theirs, and then we have a rebuttal with applicant having, appellant having final word, and then some closing arguments after all that. So before we discuss exhibits, are there any other preliminary matters we need to address?
I do, hearing examiner.
Okay, Ms. Soto, go ahead.
Really, really fast. Just in regards to scheduling, one witness that appellant named was Cecilia. She's available from 2 to 4. So I would request that she's called from 3 to 4 after the lunch hour, okay, if possible.
Okay, any objections over that? No, not seeing, that's fine then. Yeah, we'll do that. Is that it?
And then two other matters. Another witness that appellant called was Liliana Jones, who's the current clerk for the hearing examiner. The county would like to make an objection to that. We believe that it's inappropriate to call the current clerk as witness. It is a conflict of interest because of she's the current officer of this court, but the concerns of the permitting, the public comments can be addressed through Steve Heacock or even Cecilia.
Okay.
Other witnesses of the county. Is the county's belief. Also, Liliana Jones wasn't hearing examiner clerk, didn't have, those weren't her duties at the time of the public comment. So I would just like to make the objection and to have her removed as a witness.
Okay. Well, I think, yeah, the way it handles that, Mr. Clemenson is, see if you can get the information you need from Mr. Heacock or any of the other county witnesses. And if you're not able to, then you can make your case for why Ms. Jones should be called as a witness at that point.
Agreed.
Does that work for you?
Yes,
okay.
Agree.
Okay.
And then one final thing. Sorry. Sure. Just for your, we have a really long day ahead of us, a lot of witnesses. I would suggest to call Steve Heacock before any other county witnesses. I believe that Scott Diener and Jeff Smith will be unnecessary after Steve Heacock's testimony. Steve was the main reviewer for the county, and he consulted with Scott and Jeff. So they would be either redundant or have less knowledge than Steve, is the county's opinion. So for just
okay.
to.
And, sure. And Mr. Clemenson, any problem calling Mr. Heacock first, and then we can see after if you still need the others. Mr. Clemenson, you seem a little frozen there. Oh, there you are. Okay.
Yeah, no, I just froze for a moment. The joys of Zoom. It is our intent to call Mr. Heacock. We were going to call Cecilia Olson first, and then Steve Heacock. We could reverse those. However, we are planning to call the applicants prior to the county. So I don't know how that's going to affect. Nope. The overall, given that we have a 1 to 3 here, we may end up doing the applicants before the lunch break and then Cecilia after the lunch break. And then Mr. Heacock may have to be a continuance. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, can we do Mr. Heacock at 3 then first instead of Ms. Olson? Will that work at all? Or just try to, focus on him.
Steve is available all day long. Cecilia is just available from 2 to 4. That's the only.
Okay. Oh, I see. There was that issue. All right. Okay. Let's see when we get to the lunch hour, then we can figure that out. Okay. Anything else, Ms. Soto?
No, thank you so much.
Okay. Perfect. All right. Anything else from any of the other parties? So, a lot of times with exhibits, I just try to get all the exhibits on the list in at once. We'd have a very an unusually large exhibit list from Mr. Clemenson, though. So I'll just start off with Mr. Derlin. How do you want to handle the appellant's exhibits? I mean, admit them as they're brought up, or are you comfortable saying they're all, no objection to entry of all of them?
I don't have any objection specifically to any of them. So we can address them as they come up as they're relevant in the hearing.
Okay, but you don't have any objection to just admitting them now so that we don't have to go through the whole presentation and okay. Oh,
No
that's
objection.
great. All right, Ms. Soto, how about you?
The county has no objection. Thank you.
Okay, then I'll go ahead and admit the appellant's exhibits, which I believe was is it 1 through 302, was it, Ms. Jones? Okay, how about from the parties, any objections over the foundation list? Ms. Jones, how many of those were there again? Trying to pull those up.
There are now 45.
Okay, and objections over 1 through 45. Hearing none, those that are admitted. Applicants' exhibits. Ms. Jones, about how many of those?
There are four applicant exhibits.
Okay. No objections. Those are entered. And then appellants, ex or excuse me, county exhibits. Any objections over those? And Ms. Jones, how many of those?
There's one,
The one
but
that we're
it's
hearing
also
brief.
listed in the foundational as well,
Okay.
so.
Any objections? Okay, that's admitted. Okay, well, that makes it a lot easier for us all then. But here we made it past that hurdle. Okay, well, we have the county presentation to start off with. So, Ms. Soto, who's going to do that for us?
I believe, if anything, it'll be Steve Heacock can present the permit.
Okay, all right. Mr. Heacock, is he with us yet?
Yes, I'll get him pulled over in just a
Okay,
second.
great.
While that is happening, just a point of order about what you're seeing in the participants. You're going to see me, the appellant, in twice. My full name is what I'm presenting here to you and who you're seeing. The one that says Clemenson Share is only existing for the computer that I am sharing from during the appellant's argument and witnesses. So I just wanted to make folks aware of what they're seeing on their screen. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks. And Mr. Heacock looks like he is back. Just got to wait for him to be unmuted and visible. There he is. Hey,
There we
Mr.
are.
Heacock, let me swear again. Just raise your right hand. Do you swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Okay, great. Go ahead.
Well, we have before us a grading permit that had been issued here, I think, in about April, I believe. The grading permit stems from a danger tree permit that had been applied for. As we understand from talking to the applicant, that the danger tree permit managed by a contractor, which I don't recall the name or anything of the contractor, but the contractor did not understand that a grading permit was not allowed. Grading activities were not allowed in a danger tree permit. And so, working with Code Compliance, working as well with State Department of Natural Resources, as this was, related timber harvest matter, and finding out from State Department of Natural Resources that the related tree removal was indeed removal of dangerous trees because of the proximity around the property, that the required permit to rectify the matter of all of the grading of roughly about 3.5 acres of additional grading above and beyond the existing clearing area was to be managed under a grading permit. So the county then, from the co-compliance directive, directed the applicant, the Edwards, to apply for a grading permit. I'd say that the characterization of the grading one permit was an error on the part of the county. And so what ended up happening was in the grading one permit, which does not require a notice of application and no noticing is required, that upon that submitted grading permit, we started getting responses from neighbors and members, I think members of the Southworth group. And so at that point, we don't really have a way to substantiate under a grading one permit the matter for assembling comments prior to a permit even being, you know, issued. And, you know, we determined that there was a SEPA threshold matter before us as well because of the grading quantity. So what ended up happening was that we had issued a SEPA decision for the grading one permit, and I met with management and suggested that perhaps this should be a grading two permit, that we would issue a notice of application. So we issued a notice of application, and so we rectified that. And that was, I think, a incorrect assertion by the previous stormwater manager at the time. And so what we did is rectified that problem, issued a notice of application under a grading two permit. And then per the grading two review, we then issued an associated, well, then through the standard notice of application, the interested parties that we had had emails from, we had collected that information, we sent then those interested parties, including the 800-foot radii around the Edwards property lines, per our, you know, requirements in Title 21, that we notify neighbors. And so then we received additional comments from that notice of application, including a neighbor to the north, and then including additional comments, two or three additional comments. I don't know the actual number, but anyway, those folks were notified. You know, we had made sure that the, you know, comments provided were addressed in our associated SEPA decision. So, you know, part of the record is, you know, a two-page SEPA decision, you know, with a description of the notice of application, which we include. So the notice of application date was October 20th, 2023, once we figured out, you know, the correct permit. And then we described the comments, you know, received from adjacent neighbors, and, you know, described the project and the detail of the project in the description of the proposal. And then we provided conditions. And so there are five separate conditions with subsets of conditions that we included in the SEPA decision. And then, of course, we notified those folks of the SEPA decision as well. Any of the interested parties were provided that SEPA notification. And that date of the SEPA notification was March 27th, 2024. So there is a 2-week appeal period on any determination of non-significance. And so we issued that DNS on March 27th, 2024. And the appeal period ended on April 10th, 2024. And then again, you know, the Mr. Clemenson, neighbor to the west, did appeal that CEPA decision. So that's where we are now. We had the associated grading permit as well. We were getting clarification from the grading permit from the applicant. There were some matters that hadn't been fully addressed in the site plan. And as I understand, what transpired was that in between the time of the issuance of the grading permit, the appellant and applicant approached the county, and then we met with those two parties with the thought that we were going to come to an agreement or some kind of understanding in relation to the property. Cecilia Olson had organized that particular meeting, which we were hopeful that we'd get these matters resolved. But apparently that was not the case. So we issued then revised grading permit with the conditions, with all the conditions in CEPA, and provided conditions of approval, issued that permit, and then that permit was appealed as well. And that's basically where we are.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Heacock. Any questions of Mr. Heacock? I guess I'll start off with the county first, kind of as a redirect there.
Would you like me to get into my just examination questions, or
that's it's kind of an odd part of the hearing where, you know, all the parties have a right of cross-examination, but this is just a presentation from Mr. Heacock. So yeah, I think if you can say, you know, to the extent you can save your questions for you know, your presentation, that would be best. Yeah, so does that mean no questions? And Mr. Derlin, any questions, or are you going to save that for later?
I guess one clarifying question. So Mr. Heacock, you noted that the revised grading permit was then issued with the conditions. What was the reason for the revisions?
We wanted clarification on use of the easement, and as well the associated easement use to access a future barn, which had been talked about from the beginning, that there was a desire that the Edwards had to construct a barn, a barn type structure, kind of central north. You're probably familiar, but we could pull up the site plan and things like that. I'm sure that are part of the exhibit, but we wanted clarification on that particular item. And I think there was a stormwater matter in relation to what would be the understanding of stormwater related to the barn facility also. So, yeah.
Okay, and then one other question, that easement and the barn are no longer part of this proposal, is that correct?
As I understand, yes.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Derlin. And Mr. Heacock, just kind of a more of a curiosity from me, as you know, you've been in a few SDAP appeals in front of me, and yeah, they always involved a pretty detailed staff report. I'm just kind of curious, and there wasn't one for this. I take it it's based on, you know, whether improvements are made, or when do you decide to do a staff report for something like
that? That's a really good question. In a grading permit, there typically is no staff report provided in a grading permit. There's an acceptance letter, and within the acceptance letter, it has all of the conditions, all of the matters for approval. And then, of course, the associated SEPA decision. If there are conditions in the SEPA decision, that's also included within the grading permit. So that's the procedure, essentially. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, then, Mr. Clemenson, did you have any questions, or are you going to save them for your when you bring them up as a witness?
I have no questions at this time, but I have plenty I'll bring up with Mr. Heacock later. Thank you.
Okay, great. All right. Thanks, Mr. Heacock. I guess you get a little break there. And Mr. Clemenson, then moving on to you, you said you wanted to bring up applicant witnesses first. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, I've got an opening argument, just an opening presentation. Oh, sure. Quickly, and then we'll move on. This argument is not particularly lengthy, but I do want to make sure I get through that because it will help everybody here understand essentially where we're going and where we're not going, which is also important. And so I appreciate just the time to run through this first.
Okay, and let me just say too, I forgot to mention, usually go for breaks every 90 minutes. Every 90 minutes, we'll be taking about a 15-minute break. Sorry, go ahead, Mr. Clemenson.
That is much appreciated. We all need bio breaks. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Good morning. My name is Christian Clemenson, and I am representing the appellants pro se in this matter. Before I begin today, I should inform our parties and other viewers that I am partially blind. It's a condition I've dealt with most of my life and is worsening quickly this year. It means that I use different technologies on two computers to participate in one meeting. So you will see me engaging with multiple screens throughout this hearing. Thank you for your patience as I read and make notation as quickly as I can. With this permit, the appellants have the burden of telling a story. One that slices through noise to match fact with law. It's an unusual story, to be sure, because we have a particularly novel SEPA case, intertwined with a troubled history of staff turnover and confusion at the county. It's a story about a violation, the county's attempts to understand it, and many years of unexpected twists and turns for everyone involved, including the applicants. In the end, though, the appellants are obligated to illuminate the true story of this permit's facts and the law for the examiner, and we will do just that. The appellant's case follows two parallel tracks that will inevitably intersect. On one of them, we have the appeal of the SEPA determination. On the other track, we have the appeal of the SDAP itself. The SEPA story is unique because all parties have the luxury of reviewing 6 years of impacts caused by a forest conversion as part of a code compliance case. This evidence reframes how we can know the self-apparent SEPA implications of a proposal. There is no postulating, no dueling expert witnesses arguing the probabilities. To this point, the county and the applicants have been distinctly muted about the measurement of impacts we can all appreciate in front of us. The examiner will see maps, diagrams, photos, and videos detailing the actual impacts of this action, some retroactively conditioned by the county, while others neglected. Perhaps to the surprise of the county and the applicants, the examiner will also see that the SEPA determination's conditioning indeed cites and relies heavily upon the Kitsap County Comprehensive Plan. With the proposal's impacts available to see, hear, feel, touch, and breathe, we can then tackle our SEPA dilemma by examining two aspects of law. One is familiar, and that's the age-old assignment of significance of the impacts. Whether it's one so adverse that it alone qualifies, or whether the aggregate sum of many lesser impacts reaches that threshold, we'll find both at play in this field. The other aspect of law we'll examine is more distinct. In a code compliance case in which a forest was eliminated 6 years ago, does the baseline evaluation for the impacts exist before the forest's removal or after when the corrective permit is filed? The applicants and the county both embrace the latter approach to some extent, whereas the appellants will argue that the baseline for impact consideration must be the pre-violated condition of the forest. As for the SDAP's appeal, we have a cornucopia of intrigue. The county's revolving door of staff was challenged with the unenviable task of managing applicants with a history of submittal misadventures and changing intentions. Obfuscation and resistance defined the applicants as they submitted error-prone documentation and eventually refused to supply clarifying revisions and protested their way out of information requests. Both the county and the applicants, but not the appellants, have clear roles and responsibilities for Title 21, and how those parties handled and mishandled those obligations had disturbing implications for the administrative decision. The journey of the county's review of this permit has meandered through an enduring path of confusion and mistakes that even their leadership and Mr. Heacock just now have admitted. Lost public comments, acceptance letters and SEPA decisions withdrawn three times, a failure to obtain needed factual information, and applicant requirements one day that vanish the next. But the picture is even more disturbing in the failure to follow Title 17. Basic aspects of the proposal, such as the acreage cleared and the cubic yardage of dirt pushed, are all plagued by discrepancies within even the applicant's own submittals. How much forest did they actually clear? And how much dirt did they move? They provide three different numbers for each, and the appellants will show that all of them are understated with fundamental ramifications for the permit. To tell this story, the appellants will use witness testimony, an abundance of exhibits during those conversations, and a post-hearing brief to bring this tale to a final chapter, for now, at least. This is a case in which the appellants have an overwhelming grasp of the facts on the ground, literally, and the facts of the county's review. We can testify that the public records team at Kitsap County has been hard at work the past 6 years. Through their tireless endeavors, we can emblazon those facts on county and state law with confidence. The appellants believe there is room in the law for both precedent and common sense interpretation. And in an after-the-fact situation like this one, some common sense will do us all good. It is our intent to first reveal the story of how the project's parcel once existed, how the violation affected that condition, and where this permit submittals turned onto tracks that lead over a cliff. To do this, we will start by questioning the applicants. From there, we'll switch to the county reviewers to help the examiner understand their attempts to wrangle this situation and how they too found themselves on perilous tracks. During this questioning, I may interject to assist in ensuring a clear record, as my argument and witness examinations are extensions of my own testimony since I am pro se representation. While the request of release stands from the appellant statement letter and pre-hearing brief, it's important to remember our goals in this hearing. The appellants have prided themselves in being straightforward in their intentions from the very beginning of this trek, even with the applicants. Our goal is not to simply protest a deforestation. It is not to stop a family farm. It is not to insult those who violated the law. Though there are certainly those in the Southworth community and beyond who are extremely passionate about the deforestation and the destruction of a forest habitat, how it happened, and the county's response. Our goal is not to delay a process or extend civil grievances. Such things are not the purview of the hearing examiner. There is intensely personal vitriol aimed at the lead appellant by name in the applicant's opening brief. And the appellants can assure the parties that all questions asked in this hearing are posed without antipathy and are measured to support a pathway of narratives with distinct purpose at the end of the day. We are not here with buckets of popcorn by our side. Our goal is also not to take pleasure in humiliating the county because of its errors. Speaking personally for a moment, I am a career bureaucrat. I work for a government agency that has several permitting departments, some more efficient than others, and we have hearing examiners as well. I have published SEPA determinations in my routine work. I've met some of the county representatives who will be called in this hearing, and they are all good people. But I know from my work that good people sometimes make mistakes, as they have confessed, especially when turnover is high, resources are low, and complicated situations like this violation arise. Nobody wants to deal with an after-the-fact SEPA case. So what is our goal? Our goal is to ensure that the facts are recognized, that the law is properly followed, and that the SEPA consideration available to the community is exercised as fully as can be justified by law. The applicants in the county may denigrate the appellant's suggested common sense solutions, even if the components of those proposals are actually indeed supported by Kitsap County Code. Impacted neighbors have only one crack at this. They see their trees dead and dying. They feel the literal heat. They shudder at the sounds of the motorcycles. They fear their livestock allergies. They rub the dust out of their eyes. They erect fences and young trees for protection. They seek solutions. In closing, if this appeal is denied, a very loud message will be sent to the residents and businesses of Kitsap County. That message will say that foundational codes like 17430 and 2104 in Kitsap County Code have no meaning and no teeth. It will encourage our neighbors to conduct a desired land use action without the proper permit. Claim it was an accident. Blame someone else. Submit shoddy documents. Complain about fees. Delay their responses. Get free permit extensions. And in the end, the DCD will not be organized enough to hold them truly responsible to the law. Is that really the precedent we want to set here today? That concludes my opening statement. The first witness testimony I would like to seek is from the applicant, Clint Edwards.
Okay, let's bring up Mr. Edwards.
At this point, I will be sharing my screen from Ms. Jones, if that is permitted.
Let me. You should be able to share as a panelist, but if you're having difficulties, let me know.
I will make sure I'm sharing the right thing because you don't want to see anything else that I've got on this screen, I can show you.
And it looks like you are screen sharing successfully, Mr. Clemenson.
Excellent. I can see that on my other monitor. All is good.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, let me swear you in there. You'll have to unmute yourself. There should be a microphone button at the bottom left of your screen. You just click on that. It has a red bar through it. Yeah, looks like we got you there.
I thought I was clicking on the wrong button.
Okay. We hear you now.
Okay, sounds good. Right hand.
Okay, Mr. Edward. Yeah, do you swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this presentation? Or
I do. Testimony?
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, go ahead, Mr. Clemenson.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Edwards.
Morning.
So I've got a number of questions for you here, and they're going to move chronologically through time. So we're going to start primarily back in 2017 and move towards the end. And that's going to be the general narrative that we'll find in all the questioning here. You purchased your property on Southworth Drive in 2017, is that correct?
Yes.
Aside from the immediate home site, was the parcel entirely forested at that time?
I would say largely it was forested.
Okay. What was the first permit you applied for on that parcel?
The initial permit, I believe, was an SDAP, site development activity permit, which was a mistake. And I think one of our documents we provided shows that. And then the county advised us another option, which was a danger tree permit. So we withdrew the initial SDAP, went with the danger tree permit instead.
Did you apply for a Class 3 Forest Practices application for a timber harvest from the Washington Department of Natural Resources?
Is that correct? Did you say, did I? Or
yes, yeah, did you?
I don't honestly remember the specific document we provided. I know we reached out to the DNR initially. Eileen Nichols was her name. She visited our property. That looks familiar.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
Well, it looks like you were just about to do it. I was just going to say, Mr. Clemenson, anytime you bring up an exhibit, be sure to tell us the exhibit number. I rely heavily on transcripts after the hearing is over, and it really helps, you know, to know what I'm looking at.
Absolutely. I'll make sure. And if I do not, I will be previewing all of the exhibits that I bring up. Or if I do bring them up, I'm going to be discussing them thereafter. If for any party, if I forget to indicate which exhibit number it is, please let me know right away, and I'm happy to say that.
Okay, thank you.
So this is exhibit A2, Edwards Forest Practices application from April 25th, 2018. So, Mr. Edwards, you approached the DNR in early 2018, is that correct?
Yeah, so I spoke with Ben at West Cedarland. I think it was kind of a Cedarland land development or something, and he recommended I reach out to the DNR, and so we did.
Okay. Did that permit accurately describe the area you intended to log?
I'd have to review it. It's like 6-7 years ago. I honestly... would have to take a look at this form in detail.
Why did you abandon that permit?
So Eileen Nichols visited our property, like I mentioned, and while we walked the property, we found out that the DNR, this process of working with the DNR and clearing our property for timber trespass, one of the conditions was that you would have to, sorry, not timber, timber harvest, I like to correct that. One of the processes or conditions of that was to replant. And so we let Ms. Nichols know our intent was not to replant the trees. And that, so she suggested that in that case, you'd want to work with the local county. So that's what we did. We reached out to the DCD.
Okay. So you indicated to Eileen Nichols that you intended to convert the log area to pasture at that time.
I recall letting her know we wanted to harvest the trees and that we did not intend to replant the trees.
Okay. We're looking now at A9. And this was a forest practices issue form. Eileen Nichols was technically the first person to inform the county during the clearing in 2019 that there may be an issue. You can see additional information listed halfway down this form. Active conversion logging without a permit. Landowner applied for a Class 3 FPA, but told Eileen Nichols he wanted to convert to pasture. So do you recall that, Mr. Edwards?
Sounds accurate. Like I mentioned, I did not intend to replant. So I guess...
Understood.
Cutting the trees down would leave a pasture, wouldn't it?
Okay. So did Eileen Nichols indicate in June 2018 at any time that a Class 4 general permit would be required for conversion instead, or did she send you straight to the county?
I don't recall, to be honest with you. Okay. What I took away from that meeting is that for what I wanted to do with our property, it was required that we work with the Kitsap County Department of Community Development. So that's what we did.
Did she recommend any particular Kitsap County permit as an alternative?
Again, so many years ago, a verbal conversation. I just don't recall the specifics of that conversation outside of work with the county. So that's, again, what we decided to move forward with.
Okay.
I wish I remembered. I just don't. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And for everybody who's viewing, I'll be switching back to the base slide when what we're discussing doesn't have any relevance to the exhibit. I don't want to be sharing an exhibit and then move on to another topic. So to let everybody know, when you see the baseline, that means we're not discussing any particular exhibit at that exact moment. Did you follow up with, do you remember if you followed up with her and said you'd be obtaining a permit from Kitsap County? Do you remember any more contact with her?
I do not recall any more contact with her after the site visit.
Okay. You state in your opening brief that was your, quote, intent to establish an outdoor space for your children to enjoy during their upbringing, end quote. Did you not initially state that the reason for the desired conversion was to accommodate a pair of goats?
We did have a pair of goats that we purchased. That is correct. We moved them off site after about a year, year and a half to my parents' house. But there was my overall intention of outside was to have a family farm for just like I grew up on myself. We had cats and dogs and horses and goats and animals. That's a passion of mine. It's great memories of mine growing up as a child. So yes, I wanted to provide a similar outdoor experience for my children.
Understood. Were you anxious to clear your property in an effort to make as much money off of this tree removal as possible?
No,
I would say object to, sorry, can I lodge an objection? I'm not sure what the relevance of this inquiry is. I'm not sure what it has anything to do with either of the SEPA determination or the SDAP.
We have to understand the nature of the violation to understand the nature of the corrective permit. This narrative is all wrapped together.
All right. And Mr. Clements, and I mean, I'm just, you know, let's not focus too much on this because the motives and, you know, of the applicant aren't too relevant. You know, the issue is whether or not they just complied with the permit standards and did what was required. So, you know, whether Mr. Edwards was trying to get away with something or, you know, pull something over on the county isn't going to be an important factor in the determination here. I mean, I agree it's pertinent to credibility to a certain extent, but it's you know, if you can avoid just making that a major part of your presentation, that would be helpful.
It's only a portion here. And the reason, Your Honor, it's relevant is because factual basis of submittals is important. And one of the issues we're going to be finding increasingly as we move forward here is that what we're discussing here affects the facts that we see on the submittals. The county can only evaluate the facts that it receives from an applicant, correct? So if the submittals are not accurate, then yes, the motivations, the background behind that, it is our job to show this is what led to factual inaccuracies on the submittals.
Okay. Well, as I said, I'm going to allow it to at least to a limited extent, but if it becomes a major part of the of you know, your case, then we may have to limit it a little bit. But you can continue with your questioning.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
If you knew that you wanted a pasture instead of a forest, Mr. Edwards, how did you decide upon a danger tree permit from the county?
You know, I would say I'm trying to go back on memory, and this is something that I know you intend to question Megan as well. She was involved in the process of the danger tree permit, as well as the initial SDAP and subsequent SDAP. So I would ask you to ask her that question as well to clarify if I get this incorrect. But the process in which we found the danger tree permit was we reached out to the county, and we were told that a danger tree permit would be acceptable to accomplish our goal. There would be limiting factors. One of them would be the disturbing the soil with stumping. And we realized that was our intent to abide by that. So when Megan went to the website to apply, she had a hard time finding anything specific to danger tree permit. It wasn't labeled as such, if I recall. So she submitted an SDAP and then reached back out to the county saying, hey, I'm not sure if this is accurate or not. The county responded, gave her directions. She withdrew the SDAP and moved forward with the timber, the danger tree permit. So that's a record. I believe it's one of our exhibits that Peter has. So that communication.
For the record, the I don't believe the appellants have seen that. Were you aware, Mr. Edwards, that a danger tree permit requires replanting of the trees removed? Were you aware of that at the time?
No, I was not.
Were you aware at the time that danger tree permit only allows for a minimal amount of stump removal and regrading?
Yeah, I don't remember the square footage, but I do recall there was a, don't quote me if I'm wrong, but I thought it was roughly 5,000 square feet of stumping, which was the intent, is to abide by that rule. Communications with Becker Excavating, unfortunately, broke down, and there was a miscommunication or misunderstanding of what I communicated to them. We wanted to focus whatever a stumping we were allowed along the perimeter so we could erect fencing in the future without the trouble of navigating stumps. Unfortunately, that did not happen.
Were you aware that danger tree permit allows removal of trees within only 150 feet of a habitable structure?
I remember that there was, what, a tree and a half length. I think I remember that terminology. 150 sounds correct.
Did you send emails to the lead appellant in December 2018 complaining about the county's environmental requirements upon your desired tree removal?
We both had some emails back and forth. I do recall that. You know, sometimes you get in a discussion with someone and they are negative and you try to relate to their commentary. So I think in that case, I'd have to go back and read the emails. But if I recall correctly, the emails from the appellant, from you, Christian Clemenson, started out to discussing your process with your house plans. So I tried to relate to my new neighbor and also provide some commentary. Not necessarily if you can, if you have that exhibit, feel free to pull that up, the email communication.
I actually was going to ask for your consent to these communications to be entered into the record and then be supplied later. By Washington law, both sides have to consent.
Well, then I would say let's not, I don't see its relevancy, so I'd say no. What I'd like to say is I worked with the county, and as they requested items, I provided them, or I hired a professional to produce what they requested and provided what they requested. As you said in your opening brief, I find a lot of the people at the county wonderful to work with, and they've been very helpful.
All right. We're looking now at Exhibit A4. I'm going to be moving down to page 3. Again, if you prefer that I ask your wife Megan these questions, you can. I can do that. Did you guys indicate on the danger tree application there were no critical areas or associated buffers in your property or those adjacent to yours?
You know, honestly, I'm working off an iPhone, so let me zoom in here and look at this exhibit a little bit more closely.
Well, I can answer. You guys answered no. But there are no critical areas. Did you indicate?
I would say at the time, as we're, it's easy to, you know, hindsight, look backwards and try to find out if there's any errors, right? So I would say at the time that was our belief, and that was what we thought was accurate. Later on, I found out a geotech was required due to critical slopes. I found out a wetland delineation was required. And we complied with all of those requirements.
Did you also indicate that on the danger tree application there would be
Mr.
no ground?
I would object to this line of questioning. These documents are in the record. They speak for themselves.
Overruled. Go ahead, Mr. Clemenson.
Did you indicate on this application there would be no ground disturbance or stump removal over 7,000 square feet?
It looks like I'm looking here and it says no. So I guess my answer was no at that time.
Okay. We're pulling up the next exhibit. It is A5. This was a letter submitted to the county in support of the danger tree permit. It is unsigned and undated. Mr. Edwards, who wrote this letter to the county in regards to this permit?
Let me read this real quick. I honestly don't recall that email. There's no date or anything related to it.
No, it was actually a letter. You know how when you submit, when you put in submittals to an information request from the county, you typically will just append a letter and send that into the permitting system. This was just a document that was submitted in, not an email, but it's submitted into the system.
Yeah, I don't recall this.
Okay. You clearly indicate that there will be no tree removal, not stump removal, but no tree removal within 250 feet of any wetlands. Is that correct?
I think we just confirmed that I don't recall writing this. So you say, okay. I said this. I don't recall saying this or writing this. If it's part of my permit, I must have, someone must have received this information. I'm likely the person that uploaded it. I did provide the submittals online. Again, intentions versus what happened, which is what's why we had to do the after the fact corrective permit. We all know that the permit, the danger tree permit, unfortunately, work was done outside of what was allowed. So we actively worked with the county to correct those measures.
All right, this is the next exhibit is A6. I'm going to try to make sure that the entirety of it can show on the screen. It does look like it. The entirety of it is showing. This is the danger tree site map that was submitted for the danger tree permit. It indicates at the bottom, you'll see that the proposed danger tree area is marked darker. And so you'll see on the map, the trees are sort of marked over twice. There was a site of a future goat barn, which is approximately where eventually in the farm plan, you and your wife indicated you might want an actual larger barn at that point. Setback for tree removal will be greater than or equal to 250 feet from the wetland area, which is down here in the left. And the area is marked sloping. Per county records are more flat. It says here, in these flat areas, we are proposing tree removal pending site visit. Did the darker shaded areas of trees match your desired locations for tree removal?
So I will also say that this is not a document I produced myself, so I did not write it. Megan, my wife, assisted with the initial permit submissions. So again, I know you're interviewing her as well. Perhaps you could bring this up at that point.
Okay, I will. The goat barn and the site map never exist on the parcel then or now, right? You guys never ended up actually putting anything there.
No, we have not built any structures.
Okay. Did Steve Heacock from the county eventually conduct a site visit for this permit in February of 2019?
Yes, he visited the site. We were adamant about that. I believe it was a $250 extra charge. That they said, oh, it's not necessary. But we said, no, we'd like him out to make sure that we do this correctly. So yes, he visited our property.
By this time, had you already marked the approximate boundaries of your parcel with blue ribbons on trees?
So I do recall trying to establish a boundary of some sort. And so while we did that, we were marking rough estimates of where the lines were. We didn't have a survey at that point. So yeah, we did tie blue ribbons to tree branches and trees around the perimeter.
So no boundary survey prior to any of that work.
No, that's correct.
And no boundary survey prior to any of the tree removal or the stumping either, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. How many of your neighbors did you inform of your land use intentions prior to the commencement of the major work along the boundaries?
I believe the only person that it came up in conversation with was you and I. It's just my intention to clear some trees. That initial conversation, at that time, the intention was not to clear as many trees as what we ended up clearing. But that's the only conversation I recall having.
In his notes from that visit, Mr. Heacock stated, quote, cedar trees on the site were altered by brush pickers and most of the trees will die. Snagging is acceptable for these trees, end quote. Do you wish to see those notes or
No, that's fine.
Okay. For the group, it's on A18, if you'd like to view that statement. When were those cedar trees shaved to nearly their tops?
I do not recall the date. It was before Steve Peacock's arrival for the site visit. We had Ben Cedarland recommended that we have them out, given that, those were, many of them were tall trees that were included within the danger tree permit parameters. So one idea that he provided was to have this team come out and shave some of the branches. The intention was to leave the top third of the tree, I believe, for their survival. Unfortunately, they went beyond that. So when Steve visited, he let us know that those trees, unfortunately, are likely to decay and die due to the aggressive shaving. So he included them within the danger tree permit.
Okay. How was it that the cedars that were shaved went well outside the danger tree limits that you were indicating on the site map that we're looking at? In other words, if the cedars way up in the north end of the property where no clearing was to be happening, you know, those were shaved with the intent of leaving those trees?
I'm sorry, I'm a little confused on the question
okay.
here.
Okay, so in other words, we're looking at a map indicating that where you wanted the tree removal to occur. And yet the cedars were shaved all the way up to the north end of the parcel. So what you're saying is it was your intent for that shaving not to actually kill the trees.
Yeah, we never intended to kill the trees by the shaving.
Why did none of these trees ultimately end up snagged?
When you say snagged, can you elaborate or give
me? Yeah.
Mr. Examiner, I'd object to this line of questioning. Mr. Edwards is not an arborist or other environmental professional.
Well, I think he's just being asked why he didn't take a particular action, which is, you know, that's not an expertise question. So I'll overrule. And obviously, Mr. Edwards, if you don't know, just say you don't know. But
I'm happy to say snagging is essentially when you leave a dead tree standing. I mean, you can leave the whole dead tree standing. There's a habitat, or you can take it down halfway, maybe leave half the tree, or you could cut it down at the base and just leave the log laying on the ground. Either way, it's just a matter of and you know, I think Mr. Heacock will be able to testify to this too. It's a way of just leaving some habitat. Was there any consideration of just leaving those trees?
No, I wasn't aware of that at that time, the environmental potential benefit of that. So no, that was not something that we considered at the time.
Okay, moving on. Oh, okay, I'm showing the right thing. Okay, so this is an email that Steve Heacock wrote, essentially giving you the language necessary regarding the board feet of lumber. And then attaching a site map. So one of the things, in other words, when you paid Mr. Heacock to come out to your property, paid that money, it's his job then to take a look at the site map you had produced and then say, all right, this is what we discussed. Here's what we at the DCDC should be removed. And this is your clearing limit. Are you seeing this map?
Yeah, I see it.
Okay. Do you recall receiving this email with this map at the time?
I've seen this email before, yes.
Okay. Did you note the tree removal on the western and northern boundaries was not approved?
No. I believe that there was a difference in that area on harvestable timber versus timber that did not meet harvestable requirements. I forget the diameter of a tree. But no, the intent was never to go outside of the limits established unless it was not harvestable timber.
Did you note the tree removal within 120 feet of the northwest corner of your parcel was not approved?
No, I did not.
Did you note that tree removal within 150 feet of the northeast corner of your parcel was not approved?
So outside of the red line in the northwest corner, is that what you're talking about?
Northwest and northeast as well.
Northeast. No, I did not realize that at the time.
Okay. When the logging and then grading occurred that spring and summer of 2019, were you living at the property?
We were, yes.
Tom French conducted the actual cutting, correct?
Correct, his company, private company.
So Tom French's crew cut down Doug and Grand Firs, big leaf maples, and other non-brush picked trees outside of the approved radius that we're seeing here. They also removed old growth cedars in close range to the wetlands, trees that had not been logged 60 years prior, like much of the surrounding area. So the question is this, if you were aware of the danger tree limitations and you were living on the property, why didn't you go outside and stop the crew from felling trees that you knew they should not be removing?
So that's just not a correct assessment of my understanding of what was going on at the time. So I would say, for one, old growth, I'm not sure that that's accurate on what trees were removed. I was living here, residing here. We gave him the maps, we gave him the permit, and we said, feel free to clear. And so it was also to our surprise later on finding that any trees were removed outside of the area.
How long did it take French to,
I was just going to say, but my understanding at the time was many of the trees, if they were cleared outside of the area, were not harvestable. So there was no, my understanding, they were treated differently.
Okay. Did French's work take the course of days or weeks? How many days do you call French's crew being there in the tree felling portion?
Somewhere between a week or two, perhaps.
Okay. And knowing your permit, knowing the limitations, did you not have the ability to flag them down partway through their work and say, hey, you know, this is not what this permit shows?
I believe many of the trees that were taken outside of this red line were done so towards the end of the process. So, you know, to say I had 2 weeks or 1 week to notice that, I don't think would be accurate. It would come down to the very tail end of the process. And much of the work that they did was when I was away at work. Of course, I came home every night, but I didn't notice at the time that they cleared outside the limit, if they did.
Were slashings burned as part of this clearing activity?
Yeah, I went online, hired a family friend to start helping me with the cleanup. And we applied for a permit for the fire. We did not notice in the fine print that it says it was pretty clear that you were not allowed to burn cleared material. So when we were conducted some of the firing to clean up, the fire marshal visited our property, said we can't do that, and we stopped.
So after Brad Wiggins, the deputy fire marshal, visited your property to say that, did Steve Heacock also come out and reiterate that to you as well?
I don't recall meeting with Steve, and I did not meet the fire marshal either. The contractor, the family friend that we worked with, Lowell Fritz, he was the one that was engaged by the fire marshal and told us later that, hey, I'm sorry, I can't help you. This is what happened. And we said, oh, we understand. No problem. We'll figure out another solution.
Understood. When Steve Heacock visited the parcel in June of 2019, did he indicate to you that you were in violation due to excessive tree clearing and soil disturbance?
No, I don't recall. Some visits were not, I did not meet with any county official. Oftentimes, you know, there were times where they visited the property and I never saw them. So that perhaps was one of the times.
Okay. We are looking at an email now. This is A33. This is an email that Mr. Heacock sent to, I believe, you and to the engineering stormwater supervisor, Sean Lear. And I apologize ahead of time, especially to the county folks, if I'm mispronouncing any of the names of the individual at the county, especially those who have been gone for a while. In this email, Mr. Heacock noted that the stumps were primarily still in place at the time of this inspection, and that only 1 acre had been converted at that point. He sent a follow-up email to you reminding that the danger tree permits require replanting, and I identified the violation, specifying that a grading permit would be required. At this point, why did you not stop the crews from removing additional trees or stumping or regrading if you knew property was already in violation?
So I don't recall receiving that email till much later through public records requests. You'll notice that the email address, Clint Edwards UND at Yahoo, it's essentially my junk email. I believe I've been using my Gmail account for county correspondence. So it's very possible that was not received by me and deleted at the time. Any moment that the county has, like for instance, the stop work order, I've requested, hey, am I allowed to plant this or do that? Can I remove blackberries? Can I remove, you know, I always received permission and worked with the county on that. So had I received this, I would have been more than happy to oblige.
So my next question was going to be, did you consider actions you needed to take to adhere to the danger tree permit at that juncture? But you're stating that, you know, you didn't receive that email anyway.
I don't recall receiving it. And as I mentioned, this is a junk email I use for, you know, every day, just essentially just delete a substantial amount of emails that go in there.
Got it. So when Heacock actually came out to the property, who did he convey verbally this violation to? Do you recall who met him?
It was not me. I know Joel Bowling visited the property back around that same time when we were in the process of clearing following received concerns and complaints. Joe Bowling visited the property. My wife was home at the time, met her on the front porch. They had a discussion. He said, you know, I'd like to, do you have a permit? She says, yes, I do. Provided the danger tree permit to him. He reviewed the maps and the clearing and said, looks like it's fine. Sorry for bothering you. Have a great day, and left. So we were not under any impression that we were clearing outside the boundary established.
And that was a month and a half prior. That was in early May, correct? That Bowling came out?
I believe so, yes.
We're moving on to Exhibit A11. We're going to see a few photos here just to get a visualization of the project at its completion. Grading work by Becker Excavation to remove the stumps and significantly smoothen the surface of the floor of the forest largely occurred after Heacock's identification of the violation. The result of Becker's work can be seen in these pictures from early August of 2019. I'm going to just to refresh everyone's memory, show three more photos. These are A12, 13, and 14. This is 12. This is 13. And this is 14. Help me understand what we see in this final photo. This is the western side of your property at the wetlands. Your eventual wetland biologist report described your intent to convert to pasture and said that, quote, once it was revealed that these activities may have overlapped with a protected critical area, activities ceased, end quote. You had indicated in your submittals to the danger tree permit that no activity would occur within 250 feet of the wetlands.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing what is obvious in this photo with the tree felling, the stump removal, the regrading, clearing evident up to and possibly into the wetlands here. Again, why did you not stop either the logger or the excavator when this was in process?
Yeah, so I will say, I'm sure you've read the wetland delineation report. It did mention that there was this area that was cleared up to the edge, but not into. So I think that there's no question we did not clear into the wetland, but up to the border based on third party, you know, review. As far as your question, as far as why this wasn't stopped, there was no wetland delineation at this time. So where the wetland was located, was not defined. We never intended to clear inside the buffer, and we have since reestablished the buffer 4+ years ago. And it's thriving and doing fantastic. Per multiple visits from Steve Heacock and Jeff Smith, which have put eyes on the ground and seen the work we've done. But again, without that email from Steve, without us noticing that email, how would we have known to stop? We didn't. We continued on as we thought we were allowed. And the stumping, we were confident when we're aware it was not allowed. But by the time that was completed, complaints were filed, stop work orders were issued, and I reached out to the county the next day immediately and days following. And after no response, I just drove down the county to meet face to face to, you know, be adamant to work with them. So, well, once we realized what had happened, we took corrective actions immediately.
Had you walked your property? Had you explored your forest prior to this?
Yeah. There was times where I absolutely had walked through the forest.
Had you noticed that there were wet areas, ponds down there, especially at the edge of the Starkle property to your west?
No, I did not wander into that area. It was more to the north. I had a general idea, I suppose, that there were some wet areas, but again, I didn't realize the ramifications and the seriousness of a wetland. This is an education I've been, you know, obtaining over the last 6 years. Never grew up around wetlands, don't have a lot of experience in the protection mechanisms in place to protect them. So this has been quite the learning experience, and we're happy that it's thriving today.
All right. It's 250 feet from the wetlands is your home, correct? Is the edge of your house?
Haven't measured it. Our property runs roughly 330 by 990, roughly. So I would assume it's roughly 200-ish feet away from the wetlands, 250-ish.
So going back to Exhibit A-12. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, did the clearing we see in these photos show what you intended back when you told the DNR that you wanted to convert the 4.5 acres of your parcel from forest to pasture? So essentially, was this what you had in mind?
I would say no, actually. I would say that it was cleared more than I ever anticipated. As far as what you're seeing in this picture, which is now planted with grass and additional trees in certain areas.
So you have maintained with the specialist you hired for the SDAP and here today that this was largely accidental. If it was truly an accident, why did you not replant the overcleared areas beyond just the required buffers?
I've been working with the county to take action ever since it happened. This permit's lasted 6 years, so I've been restricted with a stop work order.
And yet your SDAP shows clearing limits going all the way to the boundaries in the north. In other words, the SDAP submitted for sought to legalize, essentially, what we see here. And if you had never intended, Mr. Edwards, to actually clear some of these areas that we see in the foreground, mm-hmm. why did you not say, hey, you know what, we did not intend to do that. Why not replant the areas beyond your intent, as you're saying?
Yeah, so the intention was never to clear, as you see. Once we realized that, we worked with the county, we applied to the NESDAP, and have been learning what we can and cannot do ever since. So although our intentions and our plans were one thing when we started the process, when you apply for the SDAP and learn what you can and can't do and work with engineers, and you start realizing, oh, well, we could also do this and we could also do that. And it's like, well, what if, you know, we start brainstorming with our professionals and figuring out, well, now that we're here, what is our vision? What do we want? What could we do? And our plans changed accordingly based on feedback we received from the people we worked with. This is a project in motion, so to speak, until the acceptance letter we've been issued. We still have no intention of clearing beyond what we already have. And if anything, we plan to plant trees. We just don't necessarily want it on a permit and requires to go back for review and new acceptance letters. We would like to, we basically designed and engineered, and please ask my engineer this question, is how does she calculate this? I don't know. But we designed it in a way where we could, or future people that own our property someday could develop that far out. But doesn't mean we actually want to or will. It's just that our property and our calculations for erosion and, you know, whatever calculations the engineer does, were designed in a way that we could. But our intention is, and I think you would agree, I would hope, is we've already replanted 27 conifers along the west side. And I would have to count, but I think it's roughly 13 to 15 up north along Greg Anderson's property. We have another 30-ish trees in buckets ready to plant this fall. So we are going to continue. It's just not part of the actual plan. We didn't want to go back to the beginning and start the process all over to include trees that by design are allowed to be there or not allowed to be there. It gives us ample flexibility, which is our goal.
And Mr. Clementson, I had just a quick question for you about your photograph exhibits. Ms. Jones, the exhibit list you put together has the dates of the documents. Do those dates reflect the date that the pictures were taken? Or
Yes, they do.
Yeah,
they
so do. Yes, the dates were provided by the appellant. I did not alter the dates on the index at all.
Okay. Right. And Mr. Clementson, are these photographs all taken by you that you're showing us?
Most, yes.
Okay, great. Thanks. All right. Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead. No, we've done our absolute best to ensure that on that exhibit record that the dates matched when they could. I think there are only a few exhibits where we actually just put a year because we couldn't date it.
Gotcha. Thank you.
We want to make sure for everybody understands exactly what happened when. Mr. Edwards, you stated you had no intent to clear anything more, and yet you did include in the original version of this, the easement's clearing on top of everything else. So there were going to be additional trees removed from the easement.
I would object to this line of questioning. It's concerning the easement, which is not part of this project.
Well, we're going to get into this a lot because let's say it this way. The county approved the easement development twice as part of this permit, and it is integral in understanding the review process the county went through for the entire package. And so although the easement was dropped after the second approval, the ghosts of it still exist in the conditioning for this permit, and it illuminates how the county approached this review from the start, and that is pivotal to understanding the Title 21 implications here.
So I guess in terms of project impacts, the removal of the easement reduces the overall impact, so I don't see the relevance in terms of project approval.
Mr. Clementson?
Yeah. We're trying to tell the story about how we got to the end and how that story affects the county's review. In other words, if you say, okay, the easement is no longer in there, so we can't consider any of the impacts the easement's original development intentions had on the processing of the permit, then we strip away a lot of the underlying thinking of the county in understanding how they eventually approach the other aspects of the proposal that we still see here in this photo in the
proof. Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so much going on in this case. It's difficult right up front to see, you know, how important the easement issue is. I mean, I think as you understand, Mr. Clementson, the ultimate resolution of these appeals is simply whether or not the permit applications comply with the code standards and, you know, whether there are any impacts that haven't been sufficiently mitigated in the SEPA review. And that's it. So a lot of the history, doesn't have a real central bearing on resolution of those legal issues. So, is this going to be a major part of your case talking about the easement, or is this something we can limit?
This is something we don't want to. I mean, that the easement at this point, I mean, obviously everybody's happy at this point that the easement development is not occurring. However, it does illuminate an important facet of how the county approached this permit. And so, no, as I said in the opening, we're not here to relitigate the easement. That's not our interest here. There is an irony here in that the only people that are proposing to expand the use of the easement to benefit the applicant's parcel are actually the appellants. So if you look at the request for relief, there is the option that we use the easement potentially, and in discussion with the county, this has come up, to help mitigate some of the SEPA issues that we're seeing. So it is, unfortunately, believe me, we would like to drop it. Everybody would love to drop the easement. At this point, we don't see a way we can completely extricate it.
Okay, well, like I said, limit your time as much as you can. And, you know, if we're still talking about an easement an hour from now, certainly Mr. Bowen can object again, and it'll be much more likely to be sustained. So
I spoke that wrong. I can guarantee you, Your Honor, if I'm still talking about the easement after another hour, then we're all headed in the wrong direction.
Okay. So good to hear.
All right. Yeah. No.
So we'll go on for another 10 minutes or so, and then
have a break. That sounds good.
Okay.
In the subsequent few months after what we see here in this photo, Mr. Edwards, did both you and your neighbors to the northwest, lead appellants, obtain boundary surveys?
I'm sorry, I was thinking about some things. So you're saying were boundary surveys completed at the time of this photo?
No, in the subsequent months, in other words, in the few months, the September, October, you know, the months after it, but did both you and your neighbors to the northwest obtain boundary surveys?
I did pay for a survey. I'm not sure that what you did. I personally did. CSI is the survey company that I worked with. His name was Dave. And he did a survey on our property.
Following the blue. Clearing. I'm sorry. What did you say?
Following the clearing is when the survey was established that we purchased.
Yeah. Were the blue ribbons you had originally placed around the north and west property lines to demarc your boundaries for the contractors accurate?
It appeared through, I don't know. My understanding, based on pictures I've seen you produce, is that the clearing company along the easement, inside the easement, there was some dirt disturbed beyond my property line into the easement. Also, based on pictures you provided, Debbie to our northwest corner along our driveway entry, it looked like there was some young trees that were removed in that corner as well. So the blue ribbon that we hung on the trees to get a general idea and then told the contractors to not clear within 5 to 10 feet of these limits was not abided by. And the blue ribbons were not as accurate as the survey, I'm sure.
For the record, they are off on the northwestern side by up to 12 feet.
Mr. Clemenson, if you're going to provide testimony every once in a while, I mean, first of all, you should save that, you know, you're going to just present testimony. But also, I should probably just swear you in so that the.
I'm happy to do so.
Yeah.
This is going to happen occasionally, not frequently, Your Honor, but it is going to happen occasionally.
Okay.
If you want to swear me in. All right.
Raise your right hand. You swear affirm to tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I absolutely do.
Okay, great. All right, go ahead.
As kind of a clarifying question, Mr. Clemson, are you planning on testifying later in this proceeding in a way that you'll be cross-examined? Because I guess I want to figure out what the procedure is there in terms of your testimony.
Nobody actually called me as a witness, and my testimony is sprinkled in amongst, at least from the appellant's standpoint, given that I'm pro se, sprinkled in amongst the questioning. So, that is a point of order if you wish to bring up that we should discuss.
Yeah, I don't know, Mr. Jordan. Yeah, I was thinking about that too. I wasn't quite sure if you planned on just making a factual presentation using his own testimony or not. Sounds like he's not. So I think I'll just tell the attorneys whenever he makes testimony that you're free to at that point ask, you know, to cross-examine him on those points. Since it's going to be sporadic, I wouldn't expect you to like write everything down that he says and then at the end of it all cross-examine him. So you're Ms. Soto, Mr. Durland, you're both allowed to cross-examine him whenever he gets into testimony.
Okay, that works for me.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Okay. I am, and for the record, I'm very happy to answer any question. I mean, I've not been called as a witness, but quite frankly, I'm happy to speak to this in any way.
Okay.
Now, let me find where we were. Was it at this point when the boundary survey happened that you realized the timber trespass had occurred on the neighboring properties?
As far as the definition of timber trespass, I'm trying to, you know, I haven't read the code for quite some time, but I saw the postings you made online. At that point, I did reach out and start researching whether that happened or not. I invited you to my office for a meeting in January of 2020, where we met for what, an hour and a half, 2 hours, had a lengthy discussion. My idea going into that meeting was to find a solution, remedy the easement area, and even offer to replant some different trees and shrubs and whatever. But it was evident during that appointment that we were pretty far outside of agreement on a remedy, following you requesting $120,000 of damages to write a check. So at that point, I realized we were too far apart, so I didn't propose an offer of replanting the disturbed soil. But that is when I found out that it appeared that some of the clearing went on to the easement.
Okay, I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of the values of the timber trespass here, but it suffices to say vegetation was damaged or removed on neighboring parcels, including ground cover and trees, right?
Appearing from the pictures, yes, it looked like that happened.
Okay. And was any grading conducted on the neighboring parcels as well?
I read your accusation that some dirt was pushed onto your property. So it looked to me that, yes, that could have happened.
And for all parties, the reason this is relevant is because this there's going to be arguments related to SEPA on this and whether the area that is affected by timber trespass has to be considered within the impact areas of the action. So that's just giving you a heads up ahead of time as to why we are headed in this direction. We are pulling up Exhibit 260, Appellant Exhibit 266. It's far down the list, so I need to make sure we find it. This, Mr. Edwards, is your entrance at the northwest corner. Perspectives can be a little strange. This photo is taken on April 26, 2019. Actually, it's not a photo. Let me rephrase. It is a screen grab from a video. So correction there. And this was from the initial stages of the logging operation, is it not?
I don't know when this picture or video was taken and what the timelines in reference to logging occurred.
So April 26th, you'll note that the cedar farm at the center had already been taken down, some of the trees, but not all, including the big leaf maples that held the property sign number. So it was approximately just partway through logging. Are the trees to the left of the red line located on the neighbors? You mentioned Deborah mm-hmm. Keith.
Yeah.
Okay.
So your question is what?
No, that was my question. I'm trying to say I'm moving forward.
May I clarify this exhibit?
Yes.
Are these red lines based on any survey or other information? I guess
that is correct. Story? Yes, they are. So, and Mr. Edwards can confirm this too. He had a survey done in roughly October of 2019. The lead appellants had a survey done. There is a yellow peg in the ground at the northwest boundary. You may be able to see it under the red lines. And then these lines hook up with the stakes that were planted along those lines.
So this was prepared by a surveyor then?
The photo is not. I'm happy to show you the survey. Well, the survey is one of the foundational exhibits. And so if you look at the survey, you'll note that neither gatepost is on the property line, and that the gatepost to the west, which is the one you see on the right side, is approximately 8 to 10 inches or so off, if I recall correctly. Mr. Edwards, you might have better recollection of that.
That's all right. I just wanted to know the source of this.
Yeah.
And I think actually we are at the 90-minute mark, so we can take our 15-minute break. And, you know, I also just want to interject at this point. I know this must be, this is probably very difficult for Mr. Edwards, Mr. Clemenson. I do appreciate the professionalism and civility. This is tough. You're getting through it, and you're doing really well and presenting your information in a manner that's really understandable, and you know, it's making for a good hearing. So anyway, let's take a 15-minute break, and we'll see you at 10:45.
Thank you.